Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. And before we introduce our guest, I'd like to read a quotation from Redbird Smith. Redbird Smith was the chief of the Catua Society in the early 1900s, the spiritual core of the Cherokee Nation. He said, "I've always believed that the great creator had a great design for my people, the Cherokees. I have been taught that from my childhood up and now in my mature manhood, I recognize it is a great truth. Our forces have been dissipated by the external forces. Perhaps it was just a training, but we must now get together as a race and render our contribution to mankind. We are endowed with intelligence. We are industrious. We are loyal and we are spiritual, but we are overlooking the Cherokee mission on earth. For no man nor race is endowed with these qualifications without a design purpose. Our pride and our ancestral heritage is our great incentive for handling something worthwhile to our posterity. It is this pride and ancestry that makes men strong and loyal for their principle in life. It is the same pride that makes men give up all for their government." And I'd like to introduce to you Sophia Stewart, a child prodigy, prolific writer, poet, and a creative genius. And she ascribes all this to her spiritual gifts. And how are you, Sophia?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. We've got Mark Borcherding on the line also. Mark's we turn Sophia loose. we'd like to do her her Mayan birthday reading. And Badger. Oh, there he is. Oh my gosh. Yep, we'll turn Mark loose and we'll tell Sophia about herself, and then she can tell us about herself. So, what'd you guys come up with for her Mayan birth sign?
Well, we're going to do a couple of readings here.
Okay.
First one, we'll do it in the traditional Mayan day count with the current Zulcan calendar, and In that, she's born on a day called Six Kaban, and it's the numbers. The sixth part of it represents things that kind of talks about tests, trials, and things to evolve and grow into in our life. And from my understanding of her past experience, that's pretty appropriate. The Kaban talks about wisdom, knowledge, and intelligence, and thought, movement of things, and potential of things. So you kind of combine those two together, and it's the idea of tests and trials and tribulations and things that relate to thoughts and movement and intelligence and knowledge. So now in the other one, and this is an expanded Zolk'in, there's actually going to be three different readings on it, and it'll give us a forward, a backward, and then a unified view of time for her birth. So I'll do the forward one first, and it's talking about things similar to what we just talked about, things about balancing wisdom, opening up paths, equality, awareness of things, creation, creativity and stuff. So this is stuff that may have been something that's been going on since her birth, and equality. I think we'll probably hear in her talk about her experiences, life, probably some of these things will be coming up. And it a big motivating factor in the background for her is idea of art and using art and creativity and stuff to bring things together. And mine is in Lakesha, Omitakiyas, and in Lakota, oneness, everything related. And has an aspect of free will in opening up pathways in order to accomplish that. So those are the kind of things been going on maybe since birth. On the other flow of time, coming back from the next world cycle into our present world cycle, she has the energy of serpent and light energy coming in here. And it's about a lot of things having to do with survival, instinct, sacred power, relating to light and water, and also purification. So the thing about the Hopi purification thing coming. This particular energy is sitting in the Ix cycle, the Jaguar. So these two come together in a balancing or zero point flow into a day that's called Four Sib or Four Condor. Different things. And it's about, this is where these two come together and bridge the two worlds, and her moving through from one world to the next. This is kind of a doorway or bridge or gateway for her. Oh. And it has to do with things about fearlessness, reason and justice, things forming, awareness and prosperity and things that are connecting back to that one we just talked about on the wisdom and equality and things. So it's connecting back into that. And so a lot of things here that are relating more towards in the prophecy, Eagle and Condor, Eagle of the North and Condor of the South, she has a lot of energy sitting in the South. A lot of condor energy.
Yeah, this seat of the jaguar, though. She's got that jaguar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that jaguar energy. Okay, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
That explains a lot. Well, yeah, go ahead. Don't let me slow you down.
Yeah, well, I had told you that the cats were my totems in every form, including the jaguar. I don't know if you remember that conversation,
uh-huh.
but I had spoken to you about that and that I had a connections with the Hopis, with the Katrina tribes in Arizona. So I had that great connection with them, spiritual connection.
Your jaguar.
He's just validating it. Go ahead.
Your jaguar in the Mesoamerican, Central America, South America. Jaguar is one of their most powerful totem animals. It can move to the underworld. It relates to one of the hero twins, Yax Balam, in the book the Chalam Balam, which Balam is the word for jaguar. So it might be something that you look into that. But in the Hopi, the jaguar is going to kind of connect into the bear clan. So it's going to connect into that. And so it'll be a little, you can kind of look at, you know, the bear clan stuff in the Hopi relating sort of connecting into sort of the jaguar energy. And the jaguar in the Mayan creation, when the three hearthstones were set up at the beginning of the last world age going into this one, and those three hearthstones are believed to be three of the stars in the constellation of Orion. And if you're familiar with the Hopi, you know that the Orion is very important stars for them as well in their ceremonies. And if you look at...
I don't mean to cut you off there for a second, but I was talking about it in Matrix 4 installment. In the Matrix 4 book, I am talking about the Orion's belt.
Mm-hmm.
Those very stars, three stars that you're talking about. But go ahead.
Well, you may be familiar then that those three stars can map on, the belt stars can map onto the three Hopi mesas then, right? Are you aware of that? That comes from some other people, but mainly Gary David's work.
That's right.
And but also, if you go down to South America and you look at the Nazca lines, and there's a spider one down there, and I forget the lady's name right now, but she showed how Orion mapped onto that spider. Now, the Hopi in their emergent stories talk about Spider Woman. So you can also take the Nazca spider with Orion on it and lay it right on top of Arizona and map it to the Hopi villages, and that'll fit too as well. So that also turns up and has some connections down into Mesoamerica, specifically at Teotihuacan. And so that might be something interesting for you to look at as well. And Teotihuacan has three pyramids, just like the three Egyptian pyramids, laid out like the belt stars of Orion.
Yeah, that's where I connected it with in the book. But I know about the other connections, so, you know, it does have the connections, but I did do it with, because that was the most ancient, of ancient times. Well, I don't know, because, you know, what the timelines are for all of them, but it does have the connections, like you said, and so I knew it lined up with certain grids on the, you know, the energy grids on the Earth. So you're absolutely right. But go ahead. I'm listening to you.
Well, so, yeah, that's where you're tapping into right now is that. And remember, the jaguar energy here, your birth is sitting in a cycle. That's the 15th day of the cycle in it, of this jaguar cycle. So you have two things. It's connecting, jaguar and serpent. And the serpent energy is the caudal part of Quetzalcoatl. So those two things are connecting. So you might have seen both of those showing up. Now, with your previous, your book, The Third Eye, and, of course, the third eye chakra would be on a serpent kundalini spiral going from the root chakra up through all the heart chakra and then up into the third eye and crown chakras. Now, that particular thing, the third eye, the Hopi talk about that in their emergent stories. They call it the Kopavi, and they say you're supposed to keep it open when you're going from one world cycle to the next. And so that's something you might want to look into as well. It might give you, you might see some additional things that were creeping in back in your mindset way back when you're writing your story, your book. But this jaguar and this serpent energy are coming more from the future, moving backwards. So they are things that I would think have been showing up more recently in your life. When I say recently, I mean anywhere from like around 1997, 98 forward and getting stronger.
Actually, it started even more earlier than that because I was writing The Matrix and Terminator in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And my work, you know, is, has influenced, I mean, more than a dozen movies have gotten graphics and special effects and concepts and plots and theories out of my book. It's totally amazing because my book was the paradigm that changed the whole Hollywood industry and brought forth metaphysical or spiritual movies. Because if you go back from 80 on, the science fiction movies were about fear and ignorance, you know, about some spacemen coming on Earth and terrifying the people and aliens and all this stuff. And then when my work came into fruition in 1980 and my copyrights were 81, 83, and 84, it brought forth understanding, knowledge, spiritualism, metaphysics, you know, man having started to question who he is and what's going on in the world. You know, the awakening, the shifting of consciousness, and the, you know, man having just great knowledge and starting to create great technology in his own children and so forth. So I would say that my work was the shifting of the consciousness where man just went from one world to a new world and started to see the vision of what's to come, which Matrix 4 is even greater, which I will give you guys some of the books on Matrix 4 and the Third Eye book. And for those who are interested, they can go to my website, matrixterminator.com, and get the books, or they can go to Amazon and get the books, but I would prefer them buying from me. But I'm going to make gifts to you guys of these books, and so you can see the metaphysics and the spirituality of consciousness in them.
Thank you so much. I'm sure we'll really love to read them.
Well, Sophia, how did, what kind of started you doing this? I mean, what kind of clicked or went with you to get this going? I mean, what happened to you when you started writing this?
Well, let me go back so people can understand who I am. And like I told people, my grandmother is full-blooded Cherokee, and that's where I got the gift of sight or the vision or being a visionary from. And my father is Spanish. And so what happened was when I was going to school and I was in junior high, one of my teachers got sick and for an undetermined amount of time. And so a college professor stepped in and he told us that he didn't know that much about English, but he did know he was teaching writing. So he would teach us writing. But I had already had the gift. I was already doing practice for adults at 11 years old, because a lot of adults didn't understand taxes, so they would pay me to do their taxes. So I was already an entrepreneur as a little kid. And I was doing payroll and accounts receivable for companies. You know, I was working for companies as a teenager. And later on, I scored a 98 on the IRS exam, and they wanted me to come and work for them, because I'm well-versed and gifted as like a polymathematician, like the visionary Leonardo da Vinci, or I have that gift like Tesla, you know, mathematical, quantum physics, ancient sacred geometry, the gift of numbers. And so I didn't even know that I knew that it was exceptional because I was just making straight A's, and, you know, even my brothers and sisters noticed that I was different from them. And when I started to write, then that teacher, he knew that I was really a phenomenal writer, but I did not know this. Later on, I didn't do high school. I took the New York Regents because I'm a New Yorker, and I went into college, and then I had these famous teachers, like the former journalist with the New York Times, Max Spiegel, the author, critic, Emil Kapulia, and then, of course, Big Apple playwright Paul Cherry. And later on, when I was at USC Film School, it was Leon Roth, that's R-O-T-H. His son is the screenwriter, Eric Roth, that wrote Forrest Gump and Benjamin Button. So these famous people were already rich and famous, and they were my teachers, and they were very blown away by my writing. And Max Siegel told me, as I wrote a piece for him, he said to the whole class, and he told me in the whole class that I was already a gifted writer. I had my own writing style, and there was nothing he could teach me, that I was already there, and that I would become more rich and more famous than him in the future. And the other teachers were just blown away and making fuss over my work. But it all looked so simple to me. I just didn't even understand what were they so blown away and so amazed by. Because when I looked at my writings, it was just so simple, that I thought everyone could write like that. I didn't really truly understand until I was speaking to an engineer. This guy, he was a Korean, and he was an engineer. And he read my Third Eye book, and he said, you know, and he saw the movies, The Matrix and Terminator. He says, I can think in terms of that. I know what it all means and everything, but I can't articulate it. I can't write it. Put it on paper where people can understand it the way you're doing it. And that's when I began to understand that my writing was totally different, that not only did I have the gift to see and see the future, but then the Third Eye book, this is 33 years ago, 1980, I'm at USC Film School, but I'm talking about digital downloading, barcodes, computerized warfare with the drones. I'm talking about where Trinity tells Kang, download me so I can fly this helicopter. I'm talking about body scanners and food scanners, things that were not going to come upon the earth until 30-some years later. And that my work, The Third Eye, and my script treatment, which was a 6-page movie script treatment, which is a Terminator, because the Terminator is the prequel to The Matrix, and Sarah Connor is really Neo's mother, and Neo is just an anagram or sneaky way of calling him the One, N-E-O-O-N-E, one and the same. And that John Connor's J.C., Jesus Christ, grows up to be Neo and in the Matrix. And Matrix is Latin for womb, and it's mentioned 5 times in the King James Bible in Exodus 34, chapter 19th verse. God says, he who opens the matrix is mine, meaning that the children that are born coming from the womb receives a soul. That man would be so phenomenal, and he would have the knowledge of God, and that he would start to create his own children upon the earth. And he would create mankind, or a kind of man, but it wouldn't be a human being with a soul. It would be born soulless. Because he would start creating his children out of petri dishes, test tubes, cloning, and artificial inseminations. And he would put them in all kinds of other wombs besides a female or a feminine womb. And that God was speaking that the womb was very important because the female energy was the energy of creativity, and that womb, that star, was where the children was birthed. And they received the soul. And when you look at the Terminator, which is the prequel to the Matrix, and you look at the Terminator coming down in a burning blue meteor, you know, like a burning meteorite coming in a blue flame of lightning, and he lands naked without shame, that I am creating or have created a microchip clone cyborg, which is naked without shame. And that no way in the world could Harlan Ellison or Rod Sterling or Joseph Stefano or Ray Bradbury or Roger Corman or Wes Craven or any of these old 50 science fiction writers, even Gene Roddenberry, could have not written The Terminator, because I'm bringing it to another level. This is a naked microchip cyborg clone. And that's why when you see the actor Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's walking around in the Terminator and he's naked and he doesn't know he's naked, because he's cloned, he's microchipped. And so I was born in the digital age, so I'm talking about the microchips and digital downloading and these things that come, like the computerized warfare and how they would teach with computers. And that war would be totally different from any other wars experienced upon the earth where they had men. So there's no way in the world that any of these old white science fiction writers could even understand that. I'll be back. That comes from me. We'll be back. Because he comes back as three different cyborgs. They were the old science fiction writers, or the old writers of the 50s and the 60s, and something goes way back to Jules Verne and H.G. Wells, which was born in the Iron Age. He thought of robots as metal. And then you go back further in the 1800s with Mary Shelley. She saw robots as Frankenstein, the monster, where they sewed body parts together. Because each visionary of fear is the epitome of his period of time. And so I was born in the digital age, and we're talking about microchips and digital downloading, so there's no way in the world they could have been the creator or the co-creator of this work. And when you look at Matrix 4, I go on even into deeper, the 30 or 40 years of new technology that's coming upon the earth, the holograms, the hologram clones, the virtual penal system, which I will go into and start explaining to people. I'm talking about technology that's not even on the earth yet. It has never been seen in any movie, on any movie screen. People are not even aware of this technology or what's to come. It's the shifting of consciousness. So I know a lot of people are surprised and shocked that cyborg is a microchip cyborg. The creature, the machine that is going to be the artificial intelligence. Because only a clone machine without a soul, with a microchip, can exhibit artificial intelligence, because he's cloned with a brain. And any old metal clunkety clunk is not going to have any brain, and you can't put a brain in it, and it's never going to rise above, or, you know, where they say artificial intelligence would take over. There's no way the metal, because the computers is a microchip. The computer is not a metal robot. The computer is a microchip. The one that you're on right now, your iPads, your tablets, your PCs, your desktops, or whatever you're using are microchips. And this is what I'm talking about in the future. So in Matrix 4, when I describe the virtual penal system, I'm talking about in the future, it will be so advanced. Homeland Security have read my book already, NASA scientists and doctors, and they know it's the real thing. In the future, when you commit a felony, you will lose all of your rights. They will take you as an outpatient, and they'll wheel you in on a gurney, and they will swab you and take pieces of your DNA and take your MOs and pictures of you and everything and videotape you and put it into a database. and they will insert a microchip the size of a pinhead in the delicate part of your brain so it can never be removed. If you try to have it removed, it would leave you in a vegetable state. And they will take the tracker. This is taking the tracker off of your leg, the ankle tracker now. No need for that. Now the microchip, which is a LoJack, can be tracked by Homeland Security. But in the future, you will become your own judge, jury, and executioner. There will be no more buildings and courts and prisons and jail because the virtual penal system, which I'm going to describe to you, is what's coming. And like I said, they will let you go. You'll be on probation. You'll be monitored by Homeland Security. And you may go anywhere you want because they're tracking you and videotaping you just like Google Earth. So if you commit a crime over in Moscow or you're in New York or you're in Paris, they will be able to zoom in on you and film you on tape as you commit the crime because of the chip, the microchip that's there. And then they will send a drone transporter to come and pick you up, which will be almost where you couldn't even hear it. It'll come and appear by you, open up like a giant claw, suck you in and sedate you, got you on the trip back to Homeland Security because they don't want you tampering with the transporter or trying to stop it or trying to, you know, reroute it. And they will take you back, like I said, and wheel you back in on a gurney, but this time they will insert these white laser rings around you. They are virtual laser rings that look just like the ring around Saturn. And now people know you're in jail because these rings will be around your arms and your body. And you can walk around and go home and take care of yourself because if you can't control your own emotions, then what happens is you activate the rings with your own emotions. If you snatch a purse in the mall, then you'll activate the ring and it'll cut your hand off and it will cauterize you at the same time to stop you from bleeding. If you kill somebody, it will activate the ring and it'll cut your head off. And if you run from security, Homeland Security, security people, then it will activate the rings and it'll cut your legs off. And everybody can speak to you and talk to you in the mall and walking around, and they will see that you're in jail. And you can go home and take care of yourself because in the future, the jails would be too expensive, the prisons, the guards, the money, the health, the food, everything to run, everything in the future becomes too expensive and unaffordable. So this is why the virtual penal system was created, because we're going to be living in a holographic-type world, and this is all in Matrix 4 book, by the way. I show exactly how the holograms are formed, how they become living three-dimensional images. They become living things. You are already being prepared for it when you see the 3D new machines that they have now where they can actually create 3D objects in these copier machines. They can create a gun. They can create anything. They can create 3D images into solids and create, because I know you guys have heard of this now. They have the technology right now. So
someone's had the home version right now where you can buy it.
Exactly.
I think there's someone I just saw last week or so that they're getting ready to go commercial where you can buy one and take it home. 3D printer.
Everything 3D printers, exactly. Because in the future, I'm showing all of this where man becomes so advanced that he can actually start to create like God upon the earth because he has the knowledge of God. But you can use the knowledge of God for good and create things that would be great and healing and helpful. Or you can go backwards and create something that could be oppressive and horrible to the people. Because God is no respecter of man. He doesn't, the sun doesn't shine only good people. The sun shines on the good and the bad. So all the entitlements to man, it doesn't matter who you are in your heart. It has to do with you, your choices that you make, with your actions that you bring forward. So back to the book, Matrix 4, this is the new virtual penal system that's coming, that's holographic, and that our whole world and consciousness will change into these holograms, and that there will be hologram clones walking around, and that you will not even know if they are a possessed soul or not. You will know them by their work or their actions, or the actions that they bring forth, if it is a negative or positive. And then I installed three concepts into Matrix 4 book, which is unheard of. Usually a writer barely can write one concept, but I have put in three concepts in Matrix 4. The 2012 prophecy of the Mayans, the missing gold capstones of the pyramid, and of course the Orion's the three stars of the Orion's belt. And I've put that into the book, which makes it very phenomenal and unique. And I'm describing how holograms are formed and how they use for holograms in the future and how they materialize it. And then I'm talking about UFO technology, which when Homeland Security read my book, Matrix 4, they said that I finally have solved the problem of Roswell, when the UFOs landed there and they crash-landed and some of them died. Well, the Homeland Security people, NASA scientists, they couldn't understand how you could fly those ships. They've been wondering and pondering how those ships worked for all these years, I guess, since the 50s. And when they read about my hovercraft, the Dio, in Matrix 4, I'm talking about compulsions and magnetic energy and how it really works. And how the ships really work, the UFO ships. And I had a ship also that I had created in the Third Eye book that was also an alien ship, or what they call UFO, unidentified, you know, object or technology that they were not familiar with. But I'm just telling you that it comes from spirit, that my knowledge and my gift and my vision comes from spirit, and I don't do any of the talking to the dead, mediumship, or any crystal gazing, or any tea leaves, or tarot cards, or demonology, or any of the things that people practice upon the earth, or hallucinogenic drugs or anything. You know, I don't do anything but have a natural gift, where it just comes through my DNA, and when I speak, it just comes out of my mouth. And when I write what comes right into my spirit. And so this is where it all comes from. It's a natural gift. And my grandmother, she saved my life, because there was nothing going on with me, but when I was pregnant with my son, Harris, my grandmother told me that if you don't get the baby out of you, you're going to die. Now, I was not exhibiting any unusual problems. I wasn't having any symptoms. There was nothing going on to alert me that it was a problem. But I knew my grandmother was telling the truth. So I went and saw the doctor. My doctor was not there that day, but the other doctor that worked with him, Hinky, Dr. Hinky, the young doctor, was there. And I told him my concerns, but even though there was nothing to be concerned about, but I told him that he should examine me, and he did, and he ran a scan on me, and come to find out that I was already 9 months. But I didn't appear to be 9 months. I appeared to be no more than 6 months or 7 months. And I was, if I stayed pregnant a little longer, the cord that feeds the baby, it would be 10 months. And that cord that feeds the baby would disappear, what the doctor told me. And that I needed a C-section, you know, immediately. But my doctor, when he came back, he refused to do it. And so I prayed to God, and I started making phone calls. Well, many doctors turned me down because they said that I was in the state of, you know, 10 months almost, and that was a malpractice. That could be malpractice for them. And so they had to refuse me because even though the other doctor didn't care for me correctly, they could be the ones ended up stuck with the problem. So they rejected me. But like I said, I prayed to God, and there was a military doctor because I come from a military family. And when I first saw a doctor, it was this military doctor, and his name was Christensen. And he said, yes, I remember you. And I explained to him what the problem was. He said, yes, I will go ahead and take you, even though it could cause me a problem. I still will take you. And he was the one that gave me the C-section and saved my life and my baby's life. So I knew that my grandmother's gift was greater than my gift because I was not exhibiting any problems. I was not experiencing any distress. But she saw in a glance what was going to happen. And I knew that she spoke the truth because it went to my heart. And I didn't question her and ask why or what do you mean or how come you say that, none of those things. When I hear truth, it goes into my heart, and I know that I have to do something about it. So this is what I wanted to tell you guys.
Well, that's a Cherokee for you, because that's the way we are. If we figure out something is the truth, we just go for it. We don't care what the cost may be. And by the way, Chief Charles Jotlohi, Kingfisher Rogers would like to welcome you to and can. Like you to consider yourself a member of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, and we'll be sending you what you need, you know, so you can get officially on the rolls. But welcome back to the oldest Cherokee Nation, the original Cherokee Nation.
And I thank you because I've always wanted to embrace my Cherokee side, my native side, my grandmother's side, you know, always. And because I feel that that's where my gift comes from and that's who my spirit is. That's all I've always considered what my spirit was. Because your spirit tells you who you are. And that's what my spirit has told me always.
So what kind of stuff did
you... thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you get a chance, you know, tell us more about what your grandma taught you, but I don't want to interrupt your train of thought.
Well, my grandmother taught me a lot about natural medicines and stuff because I don't even go see any doctors. I don't have any high blood pressure, no diabetes, no heart trouble or any of those things that are, you know, people do. I don't do any biopharmaceuticals. I don't smoke. I drink like in moderation. I don't do any drugs, no cigarettes, no coffee. I've never done those things because coffee was nasty. It was disgusting to me. Cigarettes was disgusting to me. But I had at birth asthma and bronchitis. And I knew that I had a great purpose in life in the future because as a baby, Satan was always trying to kill me because I suffered from asthma and bronchitis. And I would have to go into the hospital as a baby, and I was under the oxygen tent many, many times. And the hospital many, many times with asthma and bronchitis. But at a certain age, after I was a teenager, it just went away, and I didn't experience it as badly as those periods when I was a baby, tiny baby. But I remember those times. And I remember one time, and I didn't realize that I was a baby. I had no knowledge of my body or the body that I was in. All I could do is see. All I remember is seeing and seeing with knowledge. And I remember that one time it was storming really, really bad. It was just me and my grandmother. And she couldn't get any milk for me because the storm was really, really bad and you couldn't go outside. And I remember looking out the windows and seeing the storms and how bad it was and how she was pacing back and forth. And she gave me something. She made something that was so delicious. She gave it to me. And then years later, I came up to her one time and I asked her, what was that you gave me as a baby that tastes so good? And I described the storm and that she couldn't go out to get any milk. And she was just, like, it scared her. He said, but it was just me and you when you were only a tiny little baby. You couldn't know this. But I didn't even know, I didn't even know that I was a little baby. I didn't even see a body. All I could see is just see what she was doing and, she was irritated because there was no milk, and I was just aware of everything. And she taught me all kinds of, natural things with honey and the different things that, like Epsom salt and castor oil and just different kind of natural products that we have in the home. Or how to use these natural products and remedies and things, and the earth and stuff like that and how it can heal you with wounds. And I knew about the plants and the trees and everything. Like I knew naturally about chemistry and stuff and how things are, what things go together and what things do not go together and food. So I just had all these natural things. And so I never experienced things that others have experienced. When people get sick and all this stuff, and then I know what to do, and I saved my sister's life because I told you I came from a military family, and my sister was in Hawaii in the hospital, and they had given up on her to die because they couldn't do anything. She had a restricted bowel or something. A restricted problem. And then her husband called my sister, and my sister called me, and I told her to tell my sister's husband to call me directly. And he called me directly, and I told him, go to the store and get like maybe 4 lemons and get a bottle of castor oil and go to the hospital and just get 2 teaspoons of castor oil and just squeeze all these lemons in it and mix it with water and let her drink it. And that's what he did. And do you know that whatever was restricting her let loose and all of the toxin and the poison came out of her body? And to this day, she thanks me for saving her life because the hospital people couldn't do anything. They didn't even know what to do. But I have often helped and healed people as long as they did exactly what I told them to do, no matter how crazy or what it sounded like. just do exactly what I say, and you will not have any problem. You will come back, and you will be happy. And sure enough, the people would come back, and they would tell me the things I got and stuff like that. And then there would be the others. I would tell them, I will know the difference, because I said, once I tell you something, you'll come back, and you'll tell me the success of it, or you'll come back and say, well, what was it that you told me to do again? What did you say? And then I would say, I can't help you. You want to do it your way, and so why come to me and ask me for advice? So this is how it's always been. I've helped those that listen, and those who do not listen, I turn away again. I say no. Because I only tell them one time, and I tell them to write it down and ask me questions if they understand. But I have helped a lot of people that way. Yeah, one of my friends was just bringing people to me and sending them to me. Well, when they told her about their problems, she says, well, Sophia can help you, and she sent them to me. And I always try to help all the people that God sends to me. No matter what troubles or problems I'm going through, I stop and do a good deed. I stop and do a good thing and put God's work first over what I'm doing.
Well, your parents certainly gave you the right name.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was amazing, too, because I believe that God gave me the name Sophia.
Well, Stuart.
I believe that came from God. You go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, and Stuart also, you know, that's amazing. Because, what's the strict meaning of Sophia?
Well, Sophia in the Bible is wisdom or philosophy,
right?
Or pi. The pi is the ratio of all numbers, 314. And Sophia is like the, go ahead.
And the name, there's, Orthodox Jewish people, they look at you real closely, because there's a lot that your name says about you and who you are. And here you are a steward, you are a servant of wisdom.
Yes, exactly. Because that's what steward means, to serve. Exactly, it's so true. A servant of wisdom, but a servant of God. And God gave me that name. And let me tell you, the reason why I get on people when they do not pronounce my name correctly is because they will lower your vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
When your name is not spoken in the universe correctly, but God can hear the energy of your name, then your name is not heard. When someone lowers the vibrations of your name, it's not heard. And so it hurts my soul that my name is not heard.
I became aware of that some years back, and I went by my middle name, Scott, for many, many years, except for a couple of years when I lived out in California. But my there were so many Williams in the family. My mother's father, her brother, my first cousin were all Bill. But I learned a few years ago that you can change your behavior by changing little things. Even the way you form your letters, you can raise your vibration. And I changed back to Will a few years ago, and I lived in Crestone, Colorado for a while, and it's kind of a magnet for wisdom. She and I were being treated by an acupuncturist. She was a a graduate oriental medicine from Basker University, and she looked at me and she called me Will I Am one day, you know, and I said, yeah, yeah, it's in there, you know, and but I changed back to Will because I wanted to change my behavior and I wanted to have a stronger will also.
Yes, because everything you're saying is true. You can change one letter in your name and it'll change your vibration. That's what happened with Napoleon Bonaparte. Napoleon Bonaparte was this little captain in a military, and he added an E to Bonaparte, and he became the emperor of the world at that period of time. And a lot of celebrities have changed their names. Actors, like, you know, like the movie actress Sophia Loren, her name, she was born with the F-I-A, and I was born with the P-H-I-A, and the teachers try to change my name to the F-I-A, and, you know, but that was my birth, the S-O-P-H-I-A. And then, like, Marilyn Monroe, her real name was Norma Jean Baker, and then, you know, when they changed her name to Marilyn Monroe, it changed her vibrations. I mean, that's made her to a big star. And so this is what people, even Muhammad Ali, his name was Cassius Clay, and it was these slave vibrations, and then when he changed his name to Muhammad Ali, then everybody in the world knew him globally. Besides his, you know, contribution to society. So you're telling the truth.
Yeah. Now, when you were younger, now I went through a lot of the same kind of things. I had well over 100 allergies when I was a child. I had, now, I was the first child in the family to be born in a hospital. And I was raised according to Dr. Spock, and I wasn't breastfed, and, you know, they all the wrong moves were made. And I was growing up, I was allergic to peas, beans, nuts, chicken, feathers, all inhalants. I mean, there was one time when I was 6 years old that my parents loaded me into the back of the car, and my dad laid on the horn all the way to the hospital. The only parts of my body that were touching the back seat were the heels of my feet and the back of my head. Every single lymph node in my body swelled up. And I had horrible allergies. And I didn't realize, you know, until the late 80s, that it had to do with my blood type. I'm B negative. My dad's AB negative, which is the rarest blood type. Mom's O, but people with type B blood, they're not actually allergic to those things. It's that those things tend to agglutinate your blood cells and mimic allergies. In that book, Eat Right for Your Type, everybody ought to read that because there's a good list of foods and there's a bad list of foods and a neutral list of foods. And if you eat from the good list, you're going to lose weight and get healthier. And if you eat from the bad list, you're going to have a lot of problems. I know what you mean about being sick because, and I was also born with an inverted breastbone, and instead of growing out, pigeon chest, you know, it grew in and shoved my heart and lungs over to the left. And my parents said that, you know, when I was little, I never cried until, you know, I started having problems with my chest. So, you know, from the beginning, And all my life, you know, something's been trying to kill me. So, you know, it's like I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's just like today I had a digital pulse analyzer test done on me. They've made a machine now that can do what the ancient Tibetans and the practitioners of Unami medicine did, you know, where they sit and feel your pulse, and then they would know what to do. But I'd been sitting, it was at a powwow, and I was sitting in a rather warm room, and I'm a big person. And so, you know, my body was in a little bit of stress, and my normal heart rate's about 60, something like that. But at that time, it was 86. And when he ran the test, he said, you know, he says, wow, this is, you know, your heart's really, you know, he said, I've never seen a test like this. He says, your heart's really working hard. He says, but the test gives you got a B on the test, and it says your digital age is 51, and I'm 58. But you know, I've been doing little things like, you know, 2008 I started drinking alkalized water and watching my pH, and I've been a lot healthier for it. There's a lot of things people could do if they just pay attention.
Yeah, well, if they pay attention to their bodies, their bodies tell you, your body actually tells you what the cravings, what's lacking in your body. If you crave milk, then that means you need vitamin D, you know, and if you're craving nuts, you know, it's telling you what the body needs, because we really don't have to listen to men. We can listen to our bodies, ourselves, our spirits, and it tells us everything. But lots of people are not in tune. And the same, it's really weird that you brought that up, because I had a lot of allergies, the same as you, and the doctor told me I should be in a bubble because of my allergies and stuff, and they were giving me, like, 2 shots and stuff. But at some point, it went away.
Yeah.
You know, the
too.
Allergies. I mean, I still suffer from, like, sinus a little bit. Or
me too.
Postnasal drip or a little,
yeah,
what you call a cold, common cold. Yeah. But it's
so
minor that you can take an aspirin.
Yeah, well, see, all that when you were younger made your immune system stronger, but you may still have a low resistance sometimes. But yeah, I've always one of the reasons why. See, my dad was a civil engineer. His brother graduated from the Naval Academy, but they wouldn't take my dad because he was too skinny. One of the reasons why they moved us out to California is because I had such bad allergies. Then when I did move back east, you know, I experienced some of those allergies, but not on the scale like I did when I was a kid, which is just about killed me. But I basically grew up, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade in California. But, you know, my dad, you know, was... he did work for Donald Douglas, and iterating as a NASA research scientist, and he worked on the Voyager mission, he was no dummy, but the relationship that I had with him, if you want to talk about movies, it's kind of like in the first Red Dawn, where the two brothers go see their dad in the internment camp at the drive-in movie. And he says, now you know why it was so hard on you. I have a lot of things to be thankful from that I inherited, you know, from both of my bloodlines, because my dad, his father is born in Sweden, and both of his parents were from Europe. But he, because of the large age difference, there's like 12 years difference between my sister and I. And my dad was in his almost 40 years old when I was born. He gave me a perspective. And from the beginning, he was telling me, you know, you're getting a much poorer education than I got. and grew up during the Depression. And then, so I just, you know, I, even though I had a lot of problems with them when I was growing up, you know, because of that difference, I've, you know, they've been gone now for a few years, and I'm even though I had a lot of anger, you know, through a part of my life about our relationship, I've healed that now, and I'm very grateful to them. But anyway, yeah, Riley, you know, and I thought I'd tell you a little bit about myself. So I, yeah, I know what I mean about being sick when you're little, and it's awful. But yeah, you know, I studied the Zohar and the Torah for a few years, and it says in the Zohar that good people, they have a hard time at the beginning of their life, and they enjoy better health at the end of their life, whereas people who tend not to be so good have it easy when they're young, and they get it. Then their creator dumps on them when they're older. So,
I never even looked at it like that. That's wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. But anyway, go ahead. Tell us more. Oh, by the way, there is somebody that's been on the line. Are you willing to take a question from somebody?
Oh, yeah, I can take questions from a lot of people. Anybody would like, yes.
Hang on a second. Let's get her on the line. Okay, we got you on the line.
Hi. I'm calling from Nebraska. I just want to say I'm so thankful to be able to hear you. And, you know, you taught me so much, I can't tell you. Just in listening.
Oh, thank
can you. I have to say this really quick. I have never, ever in my life heard anyone who spoke about their gifts and about themselves as you, like you have. And if I could just do, because it is gifts. It is all gifts, you know, from God. It's, and I'm glad to hear someone not say, oh, you know, I'm not that great or, you know, this or that, you know, because you're not putting yourself down. You're saying what you, so someone is trying to stop me from speaking to you. I don't know if you can hear that.
Someone what now? Say that again.
Yeah, someone's trying to keep from speaking to you because they're evil and they're hacking into my phones and they're
there's something going on with your phone.
Yeah, right. I can hear that. I can hear it.
They're telling the absolute truth, trying to keep you from
speaking to me.
I've never heard that.
Any energy you can put out there to stem for me, I'd be very grateful. And but I am Cherokee, and so many things I learned. I've been trying to connect with the tribe and learn about my roots as well. And I'm just like you said, when a Cherokee hears the truth, they go for it.
Yes, wow. Someone is really attacking you because you're breaking up. We can hear only bits and pieces of what you're saying.
I've never heard anything like that on a phone line.
These people are evil.
I never either, but you could tell there is an attack on her.
And they, my partner, they changed the station to listen to the Catholic radio station, and they me and they put TVs, video my mother and I, and this is Jorge Hernandez, the TSA athletic board.
Listen, we can barely hear. We're only getting bits and pieces. We're not even getting the real story. We need to maybe like.
I'd like to be able to contact you at a different time.
Go to my website, matrixterminator.com, and my contact information is there. Matrixterminator.com is my website. And just click on contact, and there's a email address, and there's a phone number where people can call.
Great.
My office and stuff like that. And
I'll make
and
sure
so
that it's
and,
secure
and,
line.
And,
hey,
just go to someone else's phone and use.
I will, honey, because I do. So, call anyone.
Oh my God! Did you hear that? That was terrible. Whatever they're trying to do to that woman.
Okay. She's. I've never heard anything like that on a telephone. That's amazing.
Yeah, that just shows you what we're dealing with.
That's just nuts.
Know.
That's crazy. Anyway, yeah, let's move on. That was.
I would take some more phone calls if there are other people who would like to speak to me. If you don't mind, I would take other phone calls.
Well, let's see.
They can ask me anything they want.
Well, let's see how it works out. You're calling back in. Give it another try. Same problem.
Yeah.
Same
no,
problem.
They are hurting me, and any prayers you could put out are gifted.
We
I don't
will.
Know what to do.
Oh,
okay.
I will pray for you.
I'm in path, and I figured out I'm picking up that. I can feel that evil, and it's just fucking me up. I need boundaries.
Well, listen, I'm going to put you back where you can listen, but...
Just mute the
lot.
Button.
Okay, bye-bye.
God.
That's amazing.
It is. Oh, my God. I've never heard anything like that. And you can tell, too, that... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I did have... I'm a former commissioned military officer, and I was taught back in the 1990s, what can be done and who can do it. And, that's about all I want to say there. But anyway, they've been listening to you for years, and, I'm sure there's a, somebody's making a note of this conversation, but we don't care. We're just interested in the truth. So, anyway.
Yeah, well, let me tell you about some of the experiences that, well, I have had no negative experience, but people, I just did an interview, a couple of them here in a studio here in Las Vegas, and the DJ said it just blew his mind that the legislators who are, part of Nevada, he said, were listening to me. And more than usual, because they always get a couple of them, two or three, he said, but it was like 12 legislators listening to my interview. And, of course, there were thousands and thousands of people, and they could see all over, the different parts. And when people were trying to call in to speak to me when he opened up the lines, well, it actually crashed their boards because so many people were trying to ask me questions at the same time. And I just did Coast to Coast on September the 14th, and, they got 50 million listeners. And when I was on there for an hour, and when they opened up the lines for people to talk to me, their 800 line, which handles millions of people, were busy.
Wow.
That's how many people were trying to talk to me.
I can imagine.
And then as soon as the fans heard my website was matrixterminator.com, they went on there and they started emailing me and calling me, and they were people listening to me as they got in their cars and they were driving. And it was and they were buying from me, and they were buying from Amazon. They were hitting Amazon up really crazily because, you know, Amazon has, you know, people who are just tied into Amazon. So it's been, like, totally amazing that I've done over 4,000 media interviews, and I've never had a publicist at all to get any interviews. It has gone viral since 2002, and ABC broke my story October the 17th, 2003, and it went completely bonkers. I've done, like, Wall Street Journal, BBC, ABC, BET, Vibe, Source, Black Enterprise, Rolling Stone, CNN News, Independent Film Magazine, Don Diva, Expos, the Front Line, Front Page Newspapers, Gary Bird Show, Alex Jones, Way Back, Coast to Coast with Art Bale, Way Back, Jeff Lynn's Show, Hot 97 twice, WBLS twice, Doug Banks Show. I mean, I could go on and on and on. That's how phenomenal it's been. The only thing I think I haven't done, I did USA too, is Forbes Magazine, which is coming next. I assure you, I want a $1 billion judgment without an attorney. And I only asked for $150 million, and no one rebutted it, but the judges tried to be slick and smart, and they out-slicked their own selves. The judge requested that I tally up the damages. Well, the damages far exceed $150 million. The damages is over, can go up to $3 billion is what I asked for. And see, I'm not greedy. I only asked for $150 million, and I got a default judgment. You guys need to know. There's a difference between winning a judgment and going through trial and the jury awarding you money than getting a default judgment. Default judgment is like instant money. And I wasn't greedy. I only asked for $150 million, even though I know I had been done wrong and that I had lost $3 billion. And the judge said, no, the judge says tally up the damages. So the judge opened up the door. You know how that you're in court and then the DA is rebuttaling an answer, and then the judge says, well, you open up that door, now we have to entertain it. So, well, the judges open up the door, so now they got to entertain the $3 billion because I can prove up the damages. And that's the stage that I'm in right now. We're going in to proof up the damages, me and my legal team. And God sent me an incredible, huge legal team that is going to blow their minds. And I've kept it in secrecy because God has had me to keep things in secrecy, and he blesses you openly. So they got some surprises coming for them. Let's put it like that. And I wanted to also say that certain people, I don't know what this means, but you guys may know, but it's certain people that can block you upon the earth, and when they die and leave the earth, those blockages are open where positive energy can flow through. Somebody just died recently, and I'm not going to name who they are, but they were somebody big and powerful politically. And they just passed away, and three things opened up for me immediately as soon as they passed from the earth plane. Positive energy flowed out for me, and things opened up for me. So I don't know exactly what it means if the person that passed away was the evil or if they were connected to evil or they had so much power that once they left the earth, that power would dissipate and the people who were connected to it could no longer tap into it. I don't know. All I know is that when certain people are removed out of your area or arena or your space, it opens up energy pathways of positiveness. And I know, I think a lot of people out here know what I'm speaking about. But I don't know how it all works yet.
Oh, by the way, do you want to take a short a pause for the cause? About 5 minutes?
Are you talking
Sophia?
About me?
Yeah, do you want to take a short pause for the cause?
Yeah, if you would like to do that, that's fine. I'm
yeah,
fine
let's take 5 minutes. I got disconnected from Skype, had to call in by telephone. So I'm going to play Robbie Robertson's song, The Lights, which is about Indians have always seen the lights in the sky, and it's about alien abduction. I'll play that for just under 6 minutes and, allow us the time to take a little breather and do what... we naturally have to do. We'll be back in a little over 5 minutes, okay? Here we go.
Hey, Art, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So are you enjoying the show so far?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, I am.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got disconnected and had to call in, and it's weird stuff going on. So anyway, yeah, if we need to visit the restroom or something, now's the time. I'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Okay, yeah, I'll talk to my friend Art on the phone. Okay, well, you go ahead and do that. Okay? Yeah, Art, okay, you there?
Yes. Outstanding show, Sophia.
Oh, really? You like it?
I love it.
Yeah, because
I didn't know. When did you do Coast to Coast?
I did Coast to Coast on September the 14th. And, they got like 50 million listeners, and people just, I went viral on there. I went really totally viral on Coast to Coast. And,
I know,
they were supposed to have given me 3 hours, and they only gave me 1 hour, but that 1 hour, oh, my God, God really worked a miracle on it, 1 hour.
Wow.
Joe, I'm telling you, people were calling me, and they got my website, and they were emailing me, and I'm still getting in the thousands and thousands of emails. And, I got an award from Rutgers University, Women in Media, on March the 9th, 2013. And then, I got that Rosa Parks Award from the NAACP in 2005, and then the Wellness Award in 2007, and the Las Vegas Music Award in 2006, and then Empowerment Award here. And I should tell people that on the air, and when we go back on the air, I'll just tell them about my awards and stuff that I received from, all the different people.
Right. Wow.
But,
it's amazing. I didn't know you were doing the show.
Yeah, well, sometimes I do these shows and it just comes up. I was doing shows on the 13th, the 14th, the 15th. A conference on the 17th and the 18th, the 22nd. I am steadily always doing shows. My name is so huge up there now that 223 million people are following me globally around the world. And my name is in the top 10, of most known people, even though they don't know my face. My name recognition is in the top 10 of global in the world. And how do I know this? Because writers are writing about me. People are writing articles about me who have never even spoken to me, have never met me. Yeah, and the fan sends me the articles. The fan sends me the articles and everything. It's just it's amazing that they love The Matrix and Terminator.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I tell you what, you really touched on, you caught me up with during that interview, I got caught up on what's going on Matrix 4. I had no idea.
Yeah, because I sent you the autographed book, didn't I?
No, you didn't. You left me out of that loop.
No, I could have swore I sent your book to you.
No, did not.
Did you send me the address?
You know my address right here in Layton, 854 Amethyst.
No, you have to listen. Just text it over to me tonight, and you'll get it. I promise I'll send it off on Monday, and it only takes you 2 to 3 days to get it, and I promise you'll get that autographed copy.
Okay.
I was sending out so many
copies. When did you do the book, Sophia?
Matrix 4 book, the e-book has been selling globally around the world since 2012, November the 30th, 2012. And the physical e-book just came out maybe about 3 or 4 months ago.
Who was your publishing group?
My publishing group is All Eyes on Me, Inc.
Okay.
All Eyes on Me, Inc. And so, because you have to have a physical copy of that book. Gosh. Yeah, I'm autographing it.
You got to put something special in there because I got left out of the loop.
Yeah, I will. I promise you I will. You text me your
address. You got to put something real special in there for art.
Right. No, I promise you I will. because most of a lot of the interviewers, they want to autograph copies and they request them before I do the interviews with them. And I never turned down giving them a copy so they can know what's going on with Matrix 4. And then my Third Eye book is getting ready to be physical again. It's all e-books right now, except for the Matrix 4 is e-book and physical book, you know, and hard. So, but the Third Eye book is going to be back hard again in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks or less. So,
wow.
But they're big sellers and stuff like that.
Because
you hear the stuff that I'm talking about is in the books, The Matrix and The Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Matrix 4 is the fourth installment of the trilogy. So I did the book because one of my lawyers told me, why don't you put the book out, and that way everybody will be ready for the movie, Matrix 4 movie.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we're back online. I had connection problems, and I actually had to change, go to a different PC, so we're back online, only I'm on the telephone. So sorry, folks, for if we've had any problems, but, yeah, just go ahead and continue. Who we got on the line now?
Go ahead. No, I was just speaking to one of my friends who were listening in to this interview and stuff. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I was just talking about the awards that I received,
We got another caller. You're ready to take a question?
Oh, yeah, no problem, yeah.
Yeah, caller, you're calling from area code 720. Say hello to Sophia Stewart.
Hello, Sophia. I love
yes,
your work,
hi,
and
you
I just wanted to say that, I really enjoy it and am looking forward to your future endeavors.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
Did you have a question, or would you like me to just put you on so you could listen?
Yes, I wanted to listen and just let her know that I love her work.
Okay, we'll put you on the line so you can listen. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back with Sophia Stewart. Sorry about the consternation. But, go ahead, continue, and I guess we still have Mark on the line, and if you want to chime
yep,
in.
Yep, I'm here.
Anytime. Okay, yeah, it was a lot of strange problems tonight. Gee, I wonder why.
Like,
but,
So, yeah, tell us about the problems you were having. What kind of problems were you having?
Well, you said that something started
to occur.
I got disconnected from Skype and had to call in using the telephone. And then the laptop computer that I was on, all of a sudden I lost, you know, control of the show. And so I moved to a computer that's hard-lined, connected to the Internet rather than the wireless connection I had on the other one. So anyway, moving right along. Never had that happen before.
Wow. Well, did this occur just right after the problems with the lady was having?
Did that happen
right after?
Yeah.
Or was it before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who knows? Somebody out there, you know, and yeah, who knows what's going on? But anyway, we seem to be back and stable and so anyway, yeah, don't let me interrupt. It we're going to be okay now. It looks like.
Oh, okay. No, I was just talking about talking about the awards that I've received, that I got an award from the NAACP when I did a speaking engagement to the children, and they gave me the Rosa Parks Award in 2005. And then I received from Rutgers University Women in Media Award March the 9th, 2013. And I got the Oneness Award in 2007, and then a Las Vegas Music Award and an Empowerment Award in 2006 here in Vegas. So I have received awards and recognition, and I've done the red carpet with some of the really huge names, you know, with Sylvester Stallone and Dennis Hopper and, of course, Lawrence Fishburne. And Joe Jackson, and I did the Academy red carpet where the Jacksons were the ones who discovered me. They were the first ones to discover my writing gift. I did Janet Jackson's earlier scripts in the 80s until they were the ones who gave me my first break in Hollywood and introduced me to a lot of people. So this is just to give you some background information on me. If people don't know anything about me, I used to work for television, Channel 13 in New York, with a Oscar Award winning producer, Perry Miller Addato. And I worked, of course, at Columbia Pictures and the vice president, Dick Barris's office. And Brandon Cahill, the producer for Fantasy Island, during that period of time. Yeah, and I went to USC Film School. I have a degree in journalism and a double major in law and psychology. I am also a paralegal besides being a writer or producer. I'm also a paralegal gifted in law. I studied law under the Brooklyn and Manhattan attorneys. I think you were surprised about that. You didn't know I had a gift in law and that I won that default judgment without an attorney.
Well, I'm not surprised. Not surprised at all.
It's hot fire.
What was your birth date again?
Yeah, well, I don't want to give it out on the air because
okay, I'd like to say.
So are you on? I can send you a message with it.
Yeah, we're live. Okay. Well, let's see. Yeah, I'll get on. Facebook. I just wanted to give her Torah portion. Sometimes the Torah portion can really give you an insight to a little bit about yourself too. And I can email that to you later. But I'm on. I'm on Facebook now if you want to message me, Mark.
Got it.
Okay. Well, that explains some things. Okay, yeah. You guys talk for a minute, and let me look up her Torah portion and while you guys smooth for a minute.
Well, okay.
One thing, Sophia, I was kind of curious again about was the your original title in the book, The Third Eye, and the how the title and all that may fit back with your whole thing about seeing and gift and all that. Is there something still? I have a feeling there's something still about that that we haven't covered. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, what is the question about it? Because what is my eye? Is my
well, the title
eye
of the
open,
book, The
like
Third
the,
Eye, and then the your gift of seeing.
Well, let me explain some things to people because there are some things that people need to know. The Tibetans, they would put monks through disciplinary training, or they would discipline them. Put them through rigid training, and then they would just artificially open up their third eye. They would put a little stick or little stake, and they would, hammer it into the forehead right up above, above the brow, there between the brows. That is the little part where the eye is like, when people talk about the pineal glands and talking about the gift of sight. And they would prepare a monk who would actually see for the Dalai Lama. They would actually put him through this rigid training and discipline him. And then they would open up his eye because they would form this ritual. And then he had the gift of sight. And then whenever someone would come and see the Dalai Lama, this monk would be behind a partition, and he would hide, and he would listen, and he would see if the people who were coming to the Dalai Lama, if they were being deceptive, if they were coming to bring war on them, or whatever. So my gift of the eye being open like that was, I guess, it's accidental, but there are no accidents. My little brother received a bow and arrow for Christmas, and instead of, have the little arrows have the little suctions on them, he just took a slender stick and he shot me with it when we were like 3 and 4 years old or something. I was 3 years old. And that little stick stuck in my... I still have the little opening right there. And then, of course, it bled a little bit, but it wasn't no big deal. But maybe that's... Because that is where it actually happens with the Tibetan monks. But it was an accident. But then there are no accidents or no mistakes. Maybe it was meant for my eye to be open because it was open at that particular time. When my brother shot me with this little slender stick. So, and years later, I read about this, about the Tibetan monks and their practice and how they actually opens up the eye to the vision. And so I have the same mark in the same area. But it happened when I was 3. But I always had like knowledge before that, but I guess that gave me even greater clarity, even greater knowledge. Greater abilities to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
have you had any like things, connections with that back into like maybe you feel like maybe even some of your Cherokee ancestors or so are helping guide you through that?
I feel that they are, because one time I had a vision or a dream and it was all about the Hopis, and it was like they wanted me to tell their story. And
you want to know a real shocker?
The dream that, yes, go ahead.
You and I both have the same Hebrew birth date. And we were born during what the Hebrews call the month of dreams.
Wow.
And I emailed that information to you. But, yeah, I'm not surprised. You and I share, even though, you know, even though my December, my Gregorian birthday was 8 December 1954, because of the difference in the calendars, you and I have the same Hebrew birth date. And anyway, I email you some information that your Torah portion and your Haftarah give you insight into your life's mission. So, but anyway, go ahead. But I did want to let you know that. And that's a big reason.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a big reason why you're doing what you're doing, and the same goes for me.
Yeah, because like I was saying, they know that I have this gift to write, and they wanted me to write a story about them. So they came to me in a dream to write their story, and they showed me what the story was about. And after I woke up, I said out loud, but how do I find you? Because there are many Hopi tribes. So I didn't know which of the ancestors of the Hopis were trying to reach me. And I was living in California at the time, and this was 1996 or 97. And I leave, you know, because I'm in Santa Monica, California. And so after that, I just said, after I woke up from the dream, I said, well, how do I find you? And then I just left it. And then I got in my car later on to leave. And when I was leaving out, there was a U-Haul truck blocking the exit. And then I started blowing the horn because, you know, somebody was moving in. And then the movers came out and they said, oh, we're sorry, we're going to move the truck, give us a second. Well, I said, okay, and while I was giving them a second, I happened to look at the truck. This is going to blow you guys' mind, but it shouldn't. But on the truck was the Hopi Katrina tribe in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And they were in the dance ceremonial, you know, dress, dancing, and that was my answer right there.
Uh-huh.
They told me who they were that wanted me to tell this story. They wanted me to write this story because I wrote it all out. I am not joking with you guys. I wrote everything in the dream that I saw about them. And then I went to the library that right after I saw that because that was so phenomenal. And I researched them, and I found out that there was a lawyer from Utah that had done something to them, but it was between them and the Navajos. There was some kind of problems between the Hopis and the Navajos.
Yeah,
and
that was a long problem, a long time.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't even know any of
this. Yeah, Zion Security was... the lawyers that were handling Black Mesa were part of Mormon business interests. But go ahead. So yeah, I'm familiar with what's going on. Yeah,
and
I want to say one other thing is basically the BIA Hopi Council has been taken over by Hopis who have converted to Mormonism. You know, I did too back 37 years ago, but in 1985, a man appeared to me in a dream. I didn't know who he was until 2000, until that was 1984 actually, and I didn't know who he was until 1996. But did a lot of investigation and matter of fact, just finished a new website called thechoiceseer.com, which basically lays out how the relationship between Mormons and Indians got screwed up. And Chief Rogers just yesterday spoke to a crowd of about 500 people who were subscribers to Ancient American Magazine. And while he was speaking, literally people were jumping up in the air and shouting "Hoa!" and they didn't know what that means. And he brought 500, I think there were about 30-page documents with him and passed them out. And he said people were just, you know, falling all over each other. And he said when he left the podium, you know, everybody stood up and everybody wanted to touch him. And I told him, I said, that's a natural reaction. I said, because it's actually a fulfillment of prophecy from Zechariah. And let me read that to you. Now this has to do with, this is Zechariah 8:23, you know, because of the Cherokee Hebrew connection, and we know we are very strongly connected with the Hebrews, and because of his linguistic studies, Chief Rogers is a medical doctor, he's a brilliant person, but basically he was finishing the story that Joseph Smith couldn't tell them because he didn't understand some things, but everybody wanted to touch him. And there was about 40 people that wouldn't let him leave the building for 5 hours afterwards. They had so many questions. But I told him, I said, that's just a natural reaction of people who are descendants of the 10 lost tribes in diaspora. In Zechariah 8:23, it says, "So said the Lord of hosts in those days," speaking of the last days, "when 10 men," speaking of the 10 lost tribes, "of all languages of the nations shall take hold of the fringes of a Hebrew's garment, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you." And if you go to thechoiceseer.com at the very bottom of the page, you'll see the Hebrew fringe garment, Native American fringe garments, Cherokee ribbon shirt, and you'll see the white deerskin fringed jacket that that Chief Rogers was wearing during our 2001 recognition by the Republic of Mexico. And I said, yeah. I said, it's just a fulfillment of prophecy. It's a natural thing. It's what happens when. Of course, this audience was already, you know, attuned to being introduced to long hidden truths through Ancient American Magazine, but nobody had ever seen anything like this. But anyway, everybody can check out thechoiceseer.com and they can read a little bit about the story, but you know, what's been going on between Mormons and Indians. But go ahead, Sophia. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, this is fine. I mean, I wrote out their story because I was very interested in doing maybe a movie on it or bringing it out, because this is why they contacted me, I felt, spiritually. Because they wanted me to bring awareness of it, that they were done wrong, and that
you'll never guess
had something to do with it.
You'll never guess who's at NYU Film School right now. Chief's son, Charles Jr.
Oh, okay, wow.
Yeah, he's at NYU Film School right now.
What is he studying? He's studying film production.
Okay,
studying the film.
Yep.
Oh, okay, great. Wow, because I'm just telling you that they wanted a movie. They wanted me to do a movie to bring their story out, and that they showed me also in the vision, and I wrote it all down. When I got up, I wrote it all down so I would never forget it, that they were going to be victorious in the future.
That, oh, absolutely.
You know, all of this was going to be made, was going to be made right. All the wrong that had been done to them, and the difference between them and the Navajos and these Utah lawyers and so forth. And
absolutely.
They showed me what was going to happen in the future with the victory. So this is this blew my mind, because I never experienced that ever before in my life, where my native spirit, you know, spiritual ancestors contacted me. So that was like mind-boggling for me. It was amazing.
Well, I was talking with Chief Rogers just the other day, and he told me that when he was young, he dreamed that, now let me give you a little bit of background. Sam Houston he resigned as governor of Tennessee and went back to his Cherokee adoptive family, and he became the even though he didn't have a drop of Cherokee blood, as was the custom then and had been for thousands of years, anybody who wants to be a Cherokee, just, you know, Cherokee's a state of mind. It doesn't have anything to do with your bloodline. But he became the Kalanu, or speaker of our nation. He was a speaker of all of us. And, coincidentally, the word Kalanu in Hebrew means all of us. And there are many, many such coincidences between the Cherokee languages and the main difference between us and the Iroquoian language. See, we're not speaking our original language. And even the Cherokees that live up here in the United States, they finally admitted that the people that lived in the southern part of the nation, who were the original Cherokees, the ones that had the M and R sounds in their language, they migrated out of what is now the United States in 1721, and they went back to Mexico, where we were from. And three times in the 1800s, the Cherokee Nation petitioned the government of the U.S. They wanted to take the $12 million that they were given for their lands that were taken from them in the east. They wanted to go to Mexico, and they were denied. We've been prisoners here, and the Ketua, which in the original language was Ketura, and Ketura was the third wife of Abraham. The Ketura people, they've never recognized this as their home, and most of them don't want anything to do with having a membership, you know, in any of the tribes that are recognized by the government, because they this blood quantum idea is what's keeping Cherokee people from reconnecting with their culture. And back in the mid 90s or the early 90s, the Indians in Chiapas, you know, started armed rebellion against the government of Mexico, and Mexico started to rethink their relationship with Indians. And so between 1996 and 2001, they drafted something called the San Andres Accords, which basically created a tripartite relationship between pueblos, or, you know, Indian communities, and, you know, allowing them to elect their own leadership, but they actually have more freedom in Mexico than Indians do up here, because any election of a federally recognized tribe is actually called a secretary election, because any person that's elected, the head of an Indian tribe has to be approved by the Secretary of the Interior. You know, it's just is ridiculous. But in Mexico, now the Zapatistas didn't get everything they wanted. They didn't get the almost complete autonomy, but they got a heck of a lot, and they've become their own municipalities with their own governments. It's a government to government relationship. But the very first nation that was recognized under the San Andres Accords in 2001 was the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. And we have a very close working relationship. The governor of Coahuila that signed our recognition, because that's the way it was set up. It was set up so individual states. It's backwards from the way it is here in the United States. The states recognize the tribes, and then the federal government, the federal union then recognizes, you know, that tribe. And but Enrique Martinez y Martinez is now the number four man in the government. He's the Secretary of Agriculture. So. You know, unlike up here in the United States, you know, back during the colonial times and through the war with Texas, all during that period, Cherokees were very much appreciated because we weren't belligerent. We were very helpful, industrious. We knew how to do things. We knew how to teach people. You know, we helped, you know, protect the frontier, and we were go-betweens between the Comanche and the Apache, and we're very much beloved down there. We're rock stars down there, you know. So, you know, that's where we came from, and, you know, Sequoia is a national hero, and so is Dr. Rogers, but you hear, you know, hardly anything. I mean, Wikipedia will hardly even, you know, give us, you know, a paragraph. It's that bad, you know, but those things are going to change over time. But there's a tremendous, and this is all in fulfillment of the Hopi prophecy and of Mormon prophecy. If you dig deep enough, you know, you'll find that there was to be an end of the time of the Gentiles, which would begin the return of the remnants of the sons of Jacob, and that's who we are. And I believe that happened in October of 2008, because October 2008 was the end of a 2,730-year period that began, if you go back into Ezekiel, laid on his side for a certain number of days, you know, facing the southern kingdom, and then laid on his side for a certain number of days facing the northern kingdom. And he went to the Jews and he said, "You're going to go into exile. You've got to be back in a certain year." And you know, true to the prophecy, they were taken away into Babylon, but King Cyrus. King Cyrus of Persia conquered the people that had them enslaved, and he said, "Go back and build your temple." But the northern kingdom didn't come back in 390 years, and the prophecy said that if they didn't come back in 390 years, they would have to come back in seven times that. And that period ended within 2 weeks of the economic crash that happened in 2008. Which has changed everything.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting, huh?
Yes, very.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's really interesting. Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but we can go over a little bit. But if you'd like to wrap things up, you know, with some final thoughts, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I would like the people to, if they're very interested in getting Matrix 4 book, they can go on Amazon and buy from me. Amazon has a preview where you can get the preview 6 pages and see if you like the book or not. You've heard a little bit of what I was saying tonight. And I will also like to let you know that the Matrix 4 book is an e-book form for people who have tablets and iPads and, you know, Nooks and so forth, and, you know, Kindle Fire and so forth. So if you want to get the e-book, it's available on the hard copy. Go to my website, matrixterminator.com. It's one word, matrixterminator.com. Or go to Amazon, you know, your preference. I prefer you to buy it from me, but if you want to buy from Amazon, that's fine. And if you want to know more, you know, email me. If you want an autographed copy, let me know. And then the e-book, The Third Eye, is in e-book form, but it will be in less than 2 weeks. It will be in hard copy of the book. And so I'd gladly answer any questions you have or for speaking engagement.
Well, welcome home, sister, and we'll be in touch. And we'll be praying for you, and we hope you get your just desserts in your legal battle. And you know, we'll send up prayers and smoke for you. We'll get you reconnected with your Cherokee culture.
Oh, that will be great. That will be great. I look forward to that.
Hey, you're
thank
welcome.
You guys for having me.
And Mark, thank you so much for. You're just absolutely indispensable.
Well, good night, everybody. It's a good show.
Good night, everybody.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Okay,
thank you.
I'm going to roll the music, and we can go into the green room for a couple of minutes. And but everybody out there, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powell. I like Gas Mojo. The very sexy, very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it. So you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Let the truth